Warning. The following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord, Carol the Cat,
that's me,
the Giddy Geeker,
that's her,
and Tiffany the Technician.
Currently that's undercover at Gay Bingo. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Damn right they
should.
Yep.
There's no post.
you think, oh my gosh, you think we got post and editing and crap.
It's live to digital.
I was just impressed with how well you guys did that a cappella. I sounded spot on.
We're like Molly McFerrin, basically, right
now. Episode 53.
Oh my gosh. Wow, how did that happen?
I don't know.
Well, we're doing three today, so yeah. That helps.
This is 53, 52, and 53 were today. Okay, so.
It better be 53, otherwise I'm walking.
It's in his contract.
And that would be the voice of podcasting's Rich Siegfried, who's here with us today. But before we even begin to let you relax, we're going to go right into the rapid-fire response round, where I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and you are to answer with a simple word or phrase. If you take too long, we will answer for you. Typically, that inserts a stripper pole. So,
yeah, I'll do this.
So without further ado, if you could travel anywhere in the TARDIS, where would you go?
To find out where that damn swimming pool is in the TARDIS. Like, I would take the TARDIS in the TARDIS just to find that damn thing, because it seems to move all over the place.
And capes or no capes?
You know, capes are very stylish. The problem is I'm less worried about it getting caught in a jet turbine and more me accidentally stepping on it. Or the villain stepping on it, because you don't want to get snapped back like a dog on a leash.
Okay, short answers or phrases.
Stripper pole.
Stripper pole.
Oh,
okay. So what TV show are you most excited about this season?
Ooh, Ash versus Evil Dead.
Which TV show could you never watch again?
Ooh. There's a bunch that are currently on right now. You know what? Oh boy, I'm trying to think of one that I just gave up because there was one. You know what? Big Bang Theory. It's finally become what everybody has complained that it was, and that was the tropiest BS ever.
What's your secret guilty pleasure?
I love the television show Undateable. It is tropey nonsense, but the actors portray it so well, and this season being live, I laugh the hardest at that television show than any other television show. And it's such a mainstream sitcom.
Okay.
And if you were trapped on a desert island with a solar-powered rechargeable iPad, what book would you preload? Just one.
MASH by Richard Hooker, the original novel that the series... that's the one book that I reread maybe 2-3 times a year.
What album? Musical album?
I would have to say either the Gross Point Blank soundtrack or the Producer soundtrack.
Movie.
Favorite I don't know. The Producer soundtrack threw me. I wouldn't have known that about you.
I have two cats. We'll just take a slight pause here. I have two cats, one of them named Maximum Catitude and Cat Smith. I absolutely love quirky musicals. I have so many musical soundtracks on my playlist at any given time. And I spend at least 2 to 3 nights a month at the local gay club in Raleigh, emceeing burlesque shows. As a straight man, I apparently am one penis in the mouth or in the butt away from embracing my apparent destiny. So what was the question again?
Movie.
I Gross Point Blank, man.
And then game you could play on an iPad.
Game that I could play on an iPad? You know, I've been loving the shit out of Monster Strike. It's basically Pokemon with pinball.
Awesome. Wow. Well, congratulations. You survived the rapid fire response round. I don't know how rapid fire those responses were, but nevertheless, we got to know just a little bit more about the catitude of Richard Siegfried. So tell us who you are, what the heck you're doing here, and where we might know you from.
Well, I have been a creating online content for 13 years, 12 as a podcaster. People keep booking me at conventions as a podcaster, even though I haven't put out an episode of a podcast in about 7 years. But that was because I had transitioned into doing live shows, emceeing burlesque shows, ring announcing for local indie fed wrestling, anti-art school with Dr. Sketchy and stuff like that in the Raleigh area. And I wanted to focus on developing my live chops and hosting and whatnot. But then I'm slowly starting to get back into the podcasting scene. Over time, cool. I had been more behind the scenes and stuff. I am the patron saint of Geek Radio Daily, simply because whenever they have some sort of a tech problem, they contact me and I help them out. Quite a few other podcasts doing the same thing. And so I always kept my hand in the racket. And I think that's why it was like slight justification in conventions bringing me in as a podcast guest. But I had transitioned more into emceeing conventions, where opening ceremonies, the charity auction, costume contest, stuff like that. Any other kind of shenanigans where they need somebody to just ramble into a microphone. They've been using me pretty much for the past, I'd say about 7-8 years now. And that's a lot of fun too, because I don't have to go around and work my ass off getting interviews with people at conventions like I used to, which is why I respect the hell out of you guys for keep doing that, because I know how
up at 10 o'clock in the morning and doing
it. Yeah, it is not easy, because guests at conventions it's a little bit like herding cats.
Yeah,
you know, so we're trying to track them down, trying to marry their schedule with your schedule, because you know you guys also have the table not only promoting the podcast, but also the Geek Gala and also Con Carolinas. So you guys stay incredibly busy, and then having to wrangle guests and work around their schedule, it's a hell of a feat. You guys do a really kick-ass job on it, but no, for me, not having to do that was a really nice thing. Being able to basically just enjoy the convention, you know, do the stuff. Now, most conventions work the crap out of me, which I don't mind. Because
I know, which I think is what kind of shocked you about Geek Gala when I said, no, it's only these two little things. You
like, really, that's it, huh? Shit, this is a vacation.
and well, we appreciate you being there for that.
Absolutely. So. And Matt and Abby did a fantastic job hosting the whole thing. That is not an easy thing because, you know, there were some difficulties with the sound system in that joint. Yeah. And I know...
and poor things, we keep throwing them in a different location every year. So yeah, they're like, you just when we think we know what we need
it's
to
like,
do.
Dance!
And I know Mike Monahan, he worked his butt off too, trying to make it work. But, you know, there's no matter what joint you're at, there's always some sort of technical limitation.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing a charity auction at a club, and no matter how many times I told the guy, I was like, I cannot walk anywhere but this corner right here. Otherwise, there's feedback. No, nobody else has that problem. And I handed him the microphone. I was like, take 2 steps to the left. He takes 2 steps to the left. Whoa. All right, come back over here. 2 to the right. Well, man, you're still... 2 to the right. Whoa. And I'm like, are we good now? Do you understand?
Did you make him do the entire time warp?
Not quite, but I was tempted to. The thing was, this was more of the club kid kind of a joint. So I would have said the time warp, and they're like, I don't know what those words mean.
Oh.
And it's just like, look, it's line dancing for goth kids. Okay, does that help any? But so I've had joints where there was those kinds of technical problems.
Yeah.
There have been times when ring announcing for wrestling or doing trivia or even burlesque shows at conventions where something happens with the sound system, the stuff doesn't work. So at that point in time, I basically do my Brian Blessed impression and just project just to get the sound out. And so that was something at one point in time I actually did that when Matt and Abby, they didn't have the list of the auction items in front of them when they were talking about the auction. So I was just going to go up and hand it to them so that way they could see it. And that was when Matt was just like, oh, hey, look, it's Rich. So, Rich, what you doing? Can you tell us about this? And I was like, damn it, I was going to hand it to you, but all right. And so, and of course, since they've got the lava mics right up against, and I think at one point in time I even made a bit out of it that I had the audience choose
whose bosom I was going to put my head in so I could be heard on the microphone. And, of course, the audience chose Matt. And he's a handsome fellow, so I didn't mind.
Yeah, no, I didn't give them the choice. I just talked into Abby's breast. That was my option.
And it was appreciated. Are you kidding me? I was able to kill 30 seconds with that vote. And then even got the giggles from the audience with talking directly into Matt's chest. So that's right, kids. Those are some of those MC tricks you can get.
There is a lovely picture.
Fortunately, the picture of me doing it is not quite close enough to Abby's breast that people don't necessarily think that that's what I'm doing. I'm just kind of putting my arm around her.
Oh, I saved it.
So when you're on Marlene's
it's in a safe, secure vault. Don't worry.
When some of our relatives saw it on Facebook, they're like, "What a pretty picture!" And I'm like, "If you only knew what that was."
Locked away in the first bank of fabric.
Right. So hey, worst gig. You don't have to name what the gig was.
I'd be more than happy to.
Excellent. Go for it.
No, the worst gig. I will tell you. It was. Only because they have grown leaps and bounds past it. It was the very first Mysticon.
Okay.
During the costume contest, there was a group of folks that was chosen to run the masquerade, the costume contest. And it was a steampunk family. I have not seen them since. But they were supposed to be organizing the costume contest. And wouldn't you know it, at the end, three of their family members won. The thing was that the reason why it was the worst gig, besides that, because at that point in time I was just kind of done because of the earlier shenanigans with the costume contest, and I even called him out on it. I was like, "Oh, really? So same last name as the organizers, huh? Who knew? Anybody put money on that?" Besides that. And the thing was that there was no halftime entertainment booked.
Oh.
And it took them about 45 minutes to deliberate. On the winners. And so I didn't know that there was any halftime, because they said that there was going to be prejudging. So I figured they would need 5 minutes.
Right.
So I'm just like, I can fill 5 minutes, no worries. And so I'm up there just kind of doing my thing and chatting with everybody and making jokes and whatnot. And 5 minutes goes by. Then 10 minutes goes by.
Holy fuck.
Then 15 minutes goes by. And I'm like, all right, guys, we're going to come back here and let's give it a half hour. We'll see how we go. I said 20 minutes. And so everybody should be ready to go, because I was just done.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes later, everybody comes back. They're still deliberating. You can't hear the air quotes attached to that. And so then I proceed to do about 10 more minutes. Because by that point in time, I'd had a couple drinks.
So you have a comedy showcase.
Yeah, well, it was at that point in time that I learned that I needed to develop my crowd work chops. Well, and the thing is, the way I've always been, I have Asperger's, and I had to teach myself how to kind of communicate with people, with looking people in the eye. I've got a few tics that they come out only when I'm really tired, because I've learned to kind of handle those things. And I learned how to communicate basically through television, because I was raised as an only kid. And so that was what I did while my parents were working. And I knew that, you know, my dad would always give a really positive reaction with stand-up comedians. And so, and people that would just make presentations and stuff like that. So I learned how to do that by studying stand-up comedians. Now, how this pertains is that when there's something that I want to learn how to do, and there is no readily available or obvious way of learning, I'll usually throw myself into a situation where I have to sink or swim. And there have been a few times where it hasn't quite worked out as well as I had hoped. It was okay, but it wasn't as good as I wanted. And so just by doing that, kind of learning certain, basically kind of rewiring my brain, certain pathways and stuff like that, you know, you think about it as a neural network, you start to kind of reconnect things and redirect circuits and stuff like that into where you can learn things. And then also always having a few arrows in the quiver ready to go in case of a situation. So when I knew that I needed to do that, I was just like, okay, I was able to float, but I like to actually have forward momentum.
Yeah.
I like to, you know, be the best that I can be. I know I'm never going to be the best at everything, but I want to be the best that I can be, you know?
Sure.
And so that's when I started studying, you know,
crowd work comedians and stuff like that. Chris Hardwick is a fantastic one. Jimmy Pardo also. Jimmy Pardo is a comedian. He does a podcast, Never Not Funny. And it was one of the really the first stand-up comedian-based podcasts. And his albums are... In his albums, there's maybe three or five jokes. The rest is all crowd work. And so by seeing some of the stuff that he does, I'm able to kind of see the structure in that and adapt it and then figure out my own way. Chris Hardwick also, when he does the Q&As at conventions, which a lot of times they'll put in the Nerdist podcast feed, he does a lot of crowd work there, too, with letting people ask questions or asking them questions, stuff like that. So kind of learning those things and being able to see the formulas in a lot of the stuff and how things work is the way, that's the way my brain works. I'm able to kind of figure out how to do those and adapt them. The formula thing is a very cool thing that my brain does, but it also kills certain things for me. Like, I know a lot of people love The Family Guy, love Futurama, love The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I know how every joke is going to be mapped out. And so for me, there is no surprise factor to it. So the humor is lost. It's like I can appreciate what they're doing, but it's just not funny to me because I know where everything's gonna be going. I see the template behind it. And so it's as cool of a thing as it is, it also has a few limitations in that. I'm also somebody who can take any problem and break it down to black and white. And when a friend comes to you for advice, they usually don't want to know that.
Yeah.
They're like, no, it's more complicated. It's like, no, it's really not. It's you got to do this or this. That's simply what you got to do. You just don't want to do either of those. So you're going to complicate the crap out of yourself. Anyway. So that's the worst gig ever was being stuck on stage. But the good thing about it was, and I always try to find the positive in everything, was then I knew that I needed to work on crowd work. And so, and that's something that has benefited me in several costume contests when somebody was supposed to do some halftime entertainment and they just run up on stage dressed as Sailor Moon in a kilt and then run off stage. And that was the halftime entertainment and there's still 20 more minutes to go.
Oh my gosh.
You know who you are. Love you, James.
So Sailor Moon in a kilt?
Yeah, they were the Sailor Scouts.
Yeah,
or Sailor Scots. That's what they were.
Yeah,
And it was.
They literally got up, they shimmied for a minute, and then they ran off stage.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And Rich was like, "Alrighty then," and now reading from my book. So.
It was a really funny bit, but I think that that it was a little bit oversold for what it needed to for the amount of time that was needed to fill. But but it was a great thing. We got some laughs out of it.
Oh no, it was awesome.
I think that was the it was the same costume contest when I had been told Cheeky from the oh crap, what are they called now? Not the D20 girls, the Fan Dames. The Fan Dames. I sent a text that said, "Hey, Cheeky's going to put just a little bit of fairy dust on you when she goes up there
in her costume."
You remember.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay, that sounds cool. Yeah, we can totally do that. No worries. What I did not anticipate was her taking an entire handful of green glitter and dumping it on my head. And
it was gluey green glitter.
Well, no, it wasn't gluey. I'm kind of a bigger fella, so when I get up on stage... I sweat a little bit.
Yeah.
Certainly when all the attention's focused on me and stuff like that, that's still kind of the self-conscious thing that's buried down that I'm still working on trying to defeat. But I don't think I'll ever get rid of that.
You know? I actually think you shouldn't get rid of it. I find that people who are overly confident do worse.
Yeah,
Having a little fear keeps you focused.
Well,
so.
True. No, for me, because I had read a quote once that, and I can't remember who it's attributed to, but that bravery is not the absence of fear, it's merely the mastery of fear. And that's always been my philosophy, because I do stuff that scares the shit out of me regularly.
Oh my God, so much, yes.
Because that's the only way I can feel. It's something that...
it pisses me off when I'm afraid of something, and that's most likely why I'm going to do it. So.
Well, it doesn't anger me. It's more... Because all not to sound hippy-dippy, but all it is that kind of stuff, it's just energy.
Right.
It's energy inside you, and I'm not talking like some cosmic spiritual energy. It's literally adrenaline coursing through you that is energy. And so redirecting that into, you know, whether it's movement if you're scared, like getting the hell out of there, fighting, you know, the fight or flight instinct,
It just trying to redirect that into basically my brain so that way it works just a little bit faster. Yeah. And it's accessing more of the either comedic or like my senses are on high alert. So if something happens, I can comment on it and stuff like that. Because that's all it is. Because so that scared quality, that's actually kind of a cool thing. That nervous, that anxiousness, right. Just kind yeah. of redirecting it in a way that because it's just like, well, you're going to do it. So it's going to be there. So figure out a way to do it. And so that's been my philosophy. And that's something that's helped me because, you know, I've never been to college, but I've had professional level graphic design jobs, e-learning, all that kind of stuff, simply because there was something out there that I wanted to learn. And yeah. I just figure out how to do that. So, you know, whether it's motion graphics, audio editing, video editing, voiceover, directing, you know, web graphics, anything like that. It's just a matter of like, that looks cool. I want to figure out how to do that. So that's what I do. And certainly in this day and age, there's not much excuse not to learn something that you want to. With YouTube, so many tutorials that out there that you can learn how to use any bit of software. Almost every major program offers you a trial to download. And so between that and YouTube, you can learn how to do just about anything you want to, and then you'll know whether or not that's something that you want to, as opposed to always wondering if you want to do something. Uh-huh. But I find that a lot of people, they either haven't figured that out, or they just are too lazy to. And that's one of the things that I love personally about podcasting, is because it is so DIY, it is so grassroots, yeah. that there is a lot of training. When I started, you know, I was originally just putting audio online and hoping people would come back every month. It's podcasting didn't exist. You could not attach files in an RSS feed, which is what a podcast is. So remember, a podcast is not an art form. It is merely a distribution method. I'm already starting to get into the podcasting panel. Yeah. That's tomorrow. but then when the RSS2 came out, that was when I was like, hey, I can distribute my stuff, and they don't have to keep coming back to the damn website. And so it was an easier thing. And it was just kind of, and this was back in the days when I had to hard code everything. Oh. So I had to figure out how XML worked. Fortunately, I already kind of knew how HTML worked, so I understood the basics of the language. Yeah. But it was, you know, basically taking the one that Mike and Evo had put up with Winging It. It's one of the early podcasts. And I think they beat me by like 6 months. But taking their feed and replacing their information with links to my information and my description, stuff like that, putting it up. After doing that two or three times, I knew exactly how it worked, so then I just hand-coded my own. Mm. And then, of course, you have the cool things with the blogging software, which does it automatically. Yeah. But, you know, those things, in the early days, there weren't tutorials out there. True. It was just kind of figuring out how to do that. Yeah. And so that's why I love the fact that podcasting is so easy to do now, because now there's legitimately no excuse. Whether it's the hardware, hell, all of us with smartphones, yeah. We can record right into that. If you wanted to do a video, you could do it a video and then upload it and put it out in a feed or on YouTube or anything like that. Hosting, there are places where you can get free hosting.
Yeah.
There's software. Audacity is completely free. There is literally no reason why somebody can't do something like that. And so there's so many people out there that are, you know, they've always wanted to get into voice acting. Boom. Podcasting. Yeah. You have all the equipment that you need. You know, if you wanted to, you're an author, you wanted to release an audiobook, boom, you can do your own audiobook. You can release it from podiobooks.com or, you know, just even on your own website and distribute. So podcasting is such a DIY thing, and that's why I love it. And so that's why I love seeing when other people are doing it, because there's the worry that mainstream is kind of taken over with it, with so many comedians and stuff getting into it, which is fantastic, because then you get some really cool comedians out there. The problem is that it's really starting to get muddled with how many are out there. And so, you know, the best ones will rise to the top, but that's also one of the coolest things about it, is that anybody at all could do it. And so you can get these really cool takes on different content. Because everybody's, you know, every podcast that's out there, somebody's already doing that. Matter of fact, there's probably 15 other shows that are already doing it. But ever since everybody's got their own unique voice and their own unique opinion, there's going to be somebody who gets that one little angle that nobody ever thought of. And I just think that's awesome.
And the consistency,
back to the
too.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry.
You brought us back.
You break the trail.
Joey was like looking this weird look on her face. Like, is it my turn now? We're going to bring it back.
This is the thing. I try to make it as easy as possible so that way you have to think even harder for questions because I just hit you with so much information.
But you still didn't tell why the glitter was on what happened.
Yeah, I did because it was sweating and she did that. I realize you passed out halfway through my
no,
story.
No. I don't know that, like, because we were there.
Well, because I was sweating.
Yes, and then that glitter got stuck to you.
Yeah,
because that was the thing that you didn't share with the group. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
I connected it.
Yeah.
Rich, I connected it.
Fair enough. Basically, by the end of it, I looked like David Bowie playing the Terminator.
Yes.
Come with me if you want to live.
I can totally relate to you, though, with the anxiety for stuff. It's like, I've just always, my parents always moved me, like, to 3 different schools a year and just crazy shit like that. And I just kind of like, well, here I go. I have to make friends really fucking fast.
Yeah.
And I would just walk in, and sometimes the guys I would get into a fight with, when you're a kid growing up, you know, I'm like 45. Back then, you didn't get stabbed or shot. You just sort of have a fisticuffs, and it was nothing big.
Fisticuffs?
But
that's
know,
how long ago it was. They still referred to
I'm
that
still
as fisticuffs.
Yeah, back then.
They would literally, they would have their fists up
the
in front of
out like
them
here. I was barrel-chested.
He had a curly mustache. He
I
was
a curly,
12-year-old.
Yeah.
Are you 45 but, or 145?
And when he fell well, over, he'd go, whoopsie-daisy.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Well, I'll take you to the Isle of Wight. Let's go.
That's how I met a lot of girlfriends back then. No, but it's like... A lot of those people... Well, the whoops-a-daisy part, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like,
whoops-a-daisy, that's me. All right, bye. I got to transfer to another school. Bye. You're pregnant?
No, I stalked him, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah, but that's how you meet friends. And then the same thing...
Stalking
people. Yeah, fisticuffs. But no, but then... But later on, too, it's like, still, I'll be like... Oh, there's a big board game thing, and like, I don't know if I want to play board games with 80 people tonight. And it's like, I'll just kind of, my stomach could get a little upset, and I'll start sweating a little bit, and I'll be like, well, maybe I won't go. And then I go, and I have a great time. And it's just like, just the going. It's like, I know as soon as I get there, I'm golden, and I have a blast with all this stuff. And it's like,
yeah, I know. But there's still that in my head. Public speaking was, I would always, my face would get so red right before I got up there, and my hands would get freezing cold, and I figured out it was the perfect symmetry, because when I got off the stage, I could put my hands on my face, I'd calm right down. But, you know,
smart.
Then I started, I was in a business networking group, and they foolishly made me president for like 3 quarters, and I had to keep getting up there and running the meeting every week, and after a while, I was like, okay. This is what I do now. I talk in front of people, and either they listen or they don't listen, but I'm in control for a couple of minutes, so here we go. And then you just kind of get over it. But it's that whole thing. It's just like, I will overthink things.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be fine on Space Mountain, but don't make me ride that the trail that goes across from like Tomorrowland to Fantasyland.
The monorail?
The one where you're hanging. Yeah, the trees where you're hanging from the wire and the little bucket and just going across. Because I can overcalculate. I weigh this much, she weighs that much, she weighs that much. We're about that high off the ground. And if we were to fall right now, it would hit. It's like from that Eddie Murphy movie, the...
Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, right? Yeah. There's one of them. Like,
oh, it's
three
the third one, I think.
Yeah, the third
George
one
Lucas
shows
up.
Where they're dangling.
No.
But where they're dangling from the Ferris wheel bucket or whatever, and it's like, I would calculate too much. Don't make me think that. But
you know, I'm the exact same way. I have an irrational fear of when driving on a bridge over water that the bridge is going to give out.
Yes.
And I've tried to trace back to why.
Mm-hmm.
And it stems from an episode of Chips where a van went into the water upside down and Punch had to dive in to rescue the woman and the kid.
Yeah.
But it's because every time I'm driving, it's the only time when I drive when I really start to white knuckle, because I'm just like, okay, there's this many cars on this bridge. I have no idea how much this bridge can weigh, but you know, I can see the chunks that are solid chunks of the bridge that if one of those gives out, I'm the same way.
My thing is that the bridge in Connecticut back in the early 70s, it collapsed and 23 cars went in.
Yeah.
I lived in New England at the time. That was not far from me. So
in San Francisco, the earthquakes. That's when I was living in California. They had the really bad ones, and they would just, the top layer of the bridges would come down.
Yeah.
It was a pancake.
Well, in Boston, I went to school at UMass Boston, so that's the the bridges, but you'd get stuck on there for traffic, and you could feel, because they have the metal pieces so that the shift can happen with the weather, but you could feel the rumbling of the trucks above you and below you, and you're stuck in your little Civic that's not going to withstand metal falling on your head, so you're like, please just get me off of here. But, you know, that's what we do.
Suddenly we're like, when nature attacks.
When roads attack.
So. Road disasters next on Guardians of the
Geek. So what's your fear, Carol?
Oh, God. So many. Obviously performing, because I didn't get on stage at the Geek Gala.
I know. Aww. Belly dancing with Carol. It will happen.
It will.
2016.
Yeah, 2016 is her year.
Getting in front of people is probably my biggest fear. I'm tackling other fears. I mean, I tackled my fear of fire by eating it.
I know. That's pretty awesome. I did not do such a fear.
There are two fears that I won't touch. Fear of sharks, nope. And ventriloquist dolls, you can just fuck them.
Well, fortunately, first of all, I'm pretty sure that the Guardians of Geekery do not condone fucking ventriloquist dummies, but fortunately with sharks, they're pretty easy to avoid. Pretty easy to avoid.
Have you heard of these Sharknadoes, though?
I know.
Those are fictional.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, but you know, like the Star Trek episodes, and now that technology is to life. Who knows? Sharknadoes can happen.
No.
I know that.
I can't
little...
imagine anything with Tara Reid being real. Her Franken boobies aren't even real. Yeah,
the, saddest thing about Sharknado, or perhaps the best thing about Sharknado, is that Tara Reid doesn't realize that it's a comedy.
No.
And her intensity is just... Yeah.
I have no intention of ever going in the ocean, so I'm never going to meet a shark.
See, I grew up in the ocean, but, you know, it was always that thing where...
she was at a three mermaid,
years, yeah. No, but at 3 years old, my parents, in good conscience, threw me into a pool and said, learn to swim, because the tide would take you.
Sure.
That was just the way it was. And, you know, then you'd hear about kids running down the beach and saying, well, watch out, there's jellyfish over there. Some kid just jumped on one and got stung in the stomach. I'm like, oh, great, thanks.
That's
so
just
much.
An excuse for kids to pee on each other. Now, I'm wondering, the whole shark thing, did something bad happen during an episode of Jabberjaw? Or
No, I saw Jaws at an incredibly young age. Ah. And, no, sharks
couldn't be that young. I know how old you are.
I was 7. Wow.
Damn.
I'm kidding.
She's going to ride back to fucking Charlotte. Let's tone it down a little bit.
I realize that. I have the only car for the Guardians of the Geekery.
But there are other people from Charlotte here.
I can't afford that fucking Uber, so. Thanks to Carol Restacott. That's the new role. All right.
I was 6 when I saw Return of the Jedi, and they played a trailer for Poltergeist in front of it.
That
terrified the shit out of me. I crawled in my dad's lap and kept looking at the projection booth. And my dad would be like, it's okay, you can turn around. I'm like, nope. It finally was like, there's spaceships on. I'm like, okay, I'll watch the spaceships. And there's double. Oh, nope, I'm good. And so it's kind of funny that I love Star Wars as much as I do. That was kind of my first example into it.
I seriously thought you were going with a fear of Ewoks there.
Yeah. No, I have an intense...
Midget Wookiees? No, little people Wookiees.
I have an intense discomfort with clowns, but also with religious statues, because they just freak me out, so...
Well, it's always the ones where Jesus is like, he's either kind of, he's got his hands out, but from the particular angle, he looks like he's pointing at his crotch. There are those ones. Those are really weird. So many of the Virgin Mary ones just look like underneath the robes, like because she's kind of hugging herself or something like that. She's throttling a child.
Yeah.
They're just not, man.
Do you remember the picture? No. Okay.
Moving on.
See, I remember.
Wow.
You remember those religious candles that they have for the Virgin Mary? Sure. Remember the one at the Mexican restaurant where it's the Virgin Mary and she has her robe open and there's a full-size miniature Jesus under her robe. And it was just like, what is he
doing? Which one was he facing?
Yeah, this. And I was like, I do not... But it was, you know, it was very clearly a Mexican... symbol in this restaurant, and it was very religious, and I had to turn it around. It was just like, what the heck?
You realize how much money you could make if you made a candle like that with Morrissey on it?
Oh, fine.
I'm just saying that most Mexican restaurants, they do enjoy their Virgin Mary iconography, but if you did one with Morrissey, man, I tell you, you'd make $1 billion.
Oh, that's true. First week. I'll have to think about that. I have to think about that.
New business for the holidays, yeah.
No, my grandmother.
That's a Virgin Morrissey.
Yeah, Virgin Mary. Yeah.
Order now. My grandmother had one of those... Jesus with the crown of thorns on his head bleeding on the bedside table of the spare bedroom. And the other was the little St. Christopher with the crown on his head and the little ball under his hand. And she was French-Canadian. It was a very simple house. They did not have doors. They had curtains. Mm-hmm. So light would come in on the bottom and the top. And, of course, the spare bedroom was off the kitchen, so the folks would stay up talking. And I'm stuck in this room that's also a spare room, so everything gets stored under there, including the Ouija board game under the bed. And it's the old...
I always lose the dice from my Ouija board game.
The old horsehair blanket on top of you, so there's this heavy weight of an animal, dead animal on you. And, you know, on one side you can see...
God, I thought my childhood was fucked up.
You can look up and see the cross with Jesus hanging on it with his arms pointing towards this crotch above your head and wondering if it's going to fall off that little single nail that's holding it up.
Don't sin or Jesus is coming for you.
Yeah. And then the other side is St. Christopher holding this ball, which looks really weird in the dark. And then, you know, you have the Jesus head with the crown of thorns and him bleeding and him looking very sad on the other side and getting freaked out wanting to turn on the light and realizing you just poked Jesus in the eye as you were trying to find the little switch. And so therefore, yes, I have a fear of religious statues. The Madonna...
Was the switch like Jesus's nose?
No, like there was like a light was behind it. You had to reach over it, and as a little kid that was a little bit taller. And so I'd be like, and you'd feel the thorns in your fingers and yeah.
It was deliberate. They just wanted to...
Just like Jesus.
They did. They messed me up. They messed me up for life.
Nailers.
But I will tell you that because that freaked me out so much, when I went to a display store where they had a whole section of church stuff, like a salvage yard of religious stuff.
Salvagers?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Just salvaging shit.
I just need the crown of thorns.
You folks are so mean.
We are. We absolutely.
I'm telling you my childhood tragedy.
There's not a whole lot of spiritual left in this stuff. So, you know what? We'll just sell it on the cheap.
Yeah, you know, like a church decides it's not going to be Catholic anymore and it becomes, Protestant or something like that.
We're going Presbyterian.
Is that a thing that happens?
Yeah, pull out the pews.
But they will take that all of that iconography and stuff like that off of the walls, and then they will have it at a resale. Or
hey, you got to do something with it.
Yeah, you never know. A movie theater company or something can take
that. Does a priest just walk up in front of the congregation, rip off the collar, and say, "Fuck this, I'm getting married"?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I'm Presbyterian.
More like it, but yeah.
Crazy Father Frank Zoll. Religious stuff has got to go.
But I hung out in that room because it freaked me, because they had a 7-foot tall, like, cross in Jesus, like, lying on a table just like here.
Oh, my God.
And it was like the semi-darkness. But I was like, but it pissed me off that it scared me. So I hung out for a while and made myself do it.
I wonder if there's, like, a factory where they make all the Christ with the dripping blood.
There'd have to be. I mean, so, but there would also be, like, a negative imprint for the mold.
Yeah.
So that they, because they would have to mold all of those. I mean, unless they've got a model that they just do a life cast on.
Yeah.
But that just seems weird. And then the real question is that for storage? I mean, do they keep it all together, or do they have, like, Jesus torso here and his legs over here? I mean, it's just a lot of people don't think about the logistics of some sort of thing like that. Now, we are not, I want you to know, we are not mocking you. We're making light of it.
So you're adding to my horror bang.
So we can
layer.
Be on there, too.
Yeah, he just likes it because then I cut a lot closer at the end of the night.
Well, no, we're taking some of the fear from it by making light of some of these horrible things.
I'm much better than I was. But, like, when Madonna's, you know, like a prayer. Mm-hmm. No, like a prayer, which she makes
love
to the...
She did have two songs that started with like a.
Like a.
Yeah.
But when she had the like a prayer with the black Jesus coming to life... Would not watch that video. Everybody else was upset
that the black Jesus came to life.
Well, I would
really
see it come
to
on.
To that song with all the iconography.
But it's like the burning crosses at the end did not bother me, but the whole statue coming to life thing
it's
did.
Because he was black, huh?
Yeah, that was totally not it, but thanks.
My God, we learn all kinds of things about you guys in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that, isn't it surely time for us to end?
And on that bit of racism, we're going to end this episode.
Now, the real question is, Carol, are you scared of just white sharks or...
Just great white sharks?
Yeah.
It is focused on great white sharks.
That's racist, man.
I know. But I can't get mad at a hammerhead. The thing looks so fucking silly. But the great white shark, that'll eat you.
You know that the hammer is his penis, right? Look at that. Brought it back to Geeky.
Woo! And with that...
Oh, you're hitting the button.
Yeah, because you're not.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery.
God.
For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com.
She had two jobs.
And you take one of them.
Facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery. And on Twitter @CLTGOG.
Love you, Carol. Give me a red roll.
Lock and Load and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstofta.
You got yourself about a 10-minute episode there after all the
editing. We don't fucking edit.
I
know. You don't need
I'm the worst.
Go away.